think Jeanette's doing the timekeeping, so I hope she's like giving me extra time for telling my story. So hi everyone, my name's Gigi Alcock, and I grew up in a mud hut in this place called Msinga in KwaZulu-Natal. My parents were political activists and community workers, and they believed the only way to help people was to live just like them, so they built this mud hut. No running water, no electricity. My mother taught us at home at a stone table under an acacia tree, and our kitchen was another acacia tree with a gas cylinder under it, a gas stove. We washed in the Tugela River, which was running just in front of us. And we basically grew up incredibly poor, but incredibly rich in terms of culture and lifestyle and upbringing. There was a stage where I said to my father, who had been an incredibly successful farmer, owned beautiful farms in the Drakensberg foothills, who then gave them away to start a life as an activist and community worker. I wish he'd left one of the farms to me. But I did say to him at one stage in my life, "Will you send me to university?" And he said, "I'll never send you to university. I can't afford it. But I'll bring you up prepared for a life in Africa." And I never managed to go to university. I became a political activist after school. I doyed around in the townships, and I was involved in also anti-apartheid work. I then launched a business, one of the first businesses in the townships. I started as a bricklayer. I wasn't qualified for anything. I moved to Johannesburg. In Johannesburg, they call it Msinga Gwandonga Ziyaduma, which means the place where the walls thunder. And coming from Msinga, it's kind of a loud, scary place. In fact, Johnny Clegg from Juluka's colleague, Sipho Mthunu. Sipho was came from Msinga. He was our neighbor. So that's where I started as a bricklayer. Did various things in the townships. It was all I was qualified for. And I ended up running a marketing business called Minanawe Marketing. Minanawe means you and I. It was the first marketing business in the early 90s to target the what people call the informal economy, or the township economy and rural economies. It's crazy nowadays in South Africa. At the time, no one believed there was a market in that space. And we started, my two comrades, Jablani and Sandile, who'd been in the kind of political trenches with us. We started this business, became the largest marketing business of its kind in South Africa. I guess the important thing about this is that I'm not a researcher. I've never done research in my life. I'm not an academic. I don't work for an NGO. I'm a business person. I've built my business career in the marketing sector, and what I'm going to tell you about today has got everything to do with business and nothing to do with any other kind of intellectual or academic kind of perspective. And I think importantly, Alexis, I'm going to talk about the informal economy. Other people call it the informal economy. It's anything but informal. And I think this is one of the mistakes we make, is that a space that's invisible and looks chaotic to us, we don't recognize for its huge business potential. And I tend to say, you know, we generally are data rich, but insights poor. We don't really understand things. And data is retrospective. It tells us what happened in the past and not about the future. So I'll start off with a lady in Baragwanath taxi rank. And you can picture Baragwanath taxi rank is one of the biggest taxi ranks in South Africa, probably one of the biggest in Africa. And there's rows and rows of taxis and many hawkers. And this lady is incredibly well-dressed. She's got high heels on and nicely dressed. And she's sitting on a chair outside the public toilets in Baragwanath taxi rank. And she's got a little cardboard box on her lap. And on the cardboard box, she takes from a pile of or a bag full of toilet rolls, she takes a little roll and she puts these little rolls on her cardboard box and she sells them for 2 rand each. I don't know what that is in pounds, but for 2 rand each, she sells these little rolls of toilet paper. She appears to be doing very well. She wouldn't tell me how many rolls she sells a day. But what would you guess is the number of people who walk through Baragwanath taxi rank a month? Throw a number. How many? Sort of close. Okay, 13.5 million people walk through Baragwanath taxi rank every single month. That's a lot of business for this lady. So I was chatting to a friend of mine about this, who actually manufactures toilet paper, and he said, "Geez," he says, "what does she sell it for? R2 a roll of toilet for this little roll?" He said, "Do you know how many sheets there are on a roll of toilet paper?" And he proceeded to tell me that she buys a roll of toilet paper for R5 a full roll, and she sells about 30 to 40 little sub-rolls for R2 each. So she's making about up to R100 a roll that she's buying for R5. And this kind of illustrates the type of business and businesses out there. So the big thing is, if the media is to be believed in South Africa, and we all have seen these pictures of rows and rows of shacks and then a road in between, and then suddenly suburban houses with swimming pools and all of that kind of that scene of inequality with the shacks on the one side and the houses on the other, and the suburban houses on the other side. And the reality is that that is the perception that people have about the township spaces, is that it's occupied by rows and rows of informal shacks, people living in squalor, sewage running in the streets. And yet the reality is actually dramatically different. Only 8% of households in South Africa live in informal dwellings, and 90% plus live in formal dwellings. These are suburban-type houses, brick and block houses with tiles or corrugated iron, multi-room houses. And the vast proportion of these houses are financed informally through a range of different forms of finance, none of which are formal. So we have this incredible scenario where we have 18.5 million households in South Africa, of which the vast proportion of them are formal and used to be little four-room houses. The government built rows and rows of these tiny little houses, and the people living in those have transformed that space over a very small amount of time using informal incomes. And yet we still, the pictures that are dominant are these pictures of rows and rows of informal dwellings. The second thing is that we've had this complete transformation of household size in South Africa. Now, these two elements are actually incredibly important. So we have about 19% of households in South Africa are one-person households, and about 20% of households are two-people households. In fact, if you look at the population in South Africa, the population's grown at 1% over the last 1.5% in the last 20 years, and grown by about 2.5% in the last, and households have grown from about 2.5% over that time. So what you're seeing is that actually people are moving out of these large communal homes and moving into their own spaces. So 42% of households today are one or two person households. Why is this important? There's a little business called IKEA that started in Sweden. And IKEA built their business of offcut wood, turning it into flat pack furniture, for one or two person households living in small formal dwellings. Reality today is that the demographic of South Africa and the structure of households is no different from Sweden 30 years ago when IKEA launched their business. We don't think of South Africa in that kind of dynamic. Why is this important? Smaller households buy less on essentials and staple foods and spend more on themselves. They spend on appliances, they spend on personal care, beauty items, and so on. This is a trend anywhere you want to go in the world, and we see exactly the same happening in South Africa. One of the other things is this growth of households means there's a massive demand for housing. And in fact, one of the things that we see in this so-called informal economy is a massive growth of demand and building of what we call amaroom or backroom units. They're in fact actually flat type rooms, little 3x3 meter or 6x3 meter units with a tiny little kitchenette in the corner. Probably very familiar to anyone who moved to London, you know. So we have this kind of growth of these kind of units. And I'll just give you an example. There's a guy called Sbu in KZN, just outside in one of the townships just outside Durban. He has what's called a shisanyama, which is a baie and braai, a grill, and a tavern. And it's a really fancy place, leather couches and so on. And he's taken his proceeds and he's built three blocks of flats outside his shisanyama. And using the cash flow from that, he buys the building materials and he pays a builder to build it. He's built 28 rooms that he's renting out at 3,000 rand a room. And he reckons there's a demand is probably for another 5 to 10 of these kind of units. According to the government, estimates that there's about a demand for 2 million units in South Africa, micro units, these little one bedroom, two room flats. And it'll cost the government 348 billion rand to build these units. And they actually saying they don't have the money. The mayor of Cape Town has said that there's a huge demand within the Western Cape for one or two bedroom units, and they can't build. They don't have the money to build them, so they're reverting to township entrepreneurs to build what they call these micro units. So we have this massive growth just within. I'm not even talking about the economy yet. Just the shape of our kind of a structure of our society has meant that there's a huge amount of growth. In fact, on Monday, there was a report in the financial media of a company called Calgro M3, who said that there's a demand for 100,000 affordable units between 100,000 rand and a 1.5 million houses. They build thousands and thousands of units every single year, and they sell every single thing they build. Just within the housing sector, the affordable housing sector, there's this massive growth of houses. And yet, in many ways, people ignore this opportunity. Alec and I interviewed a young lady called Dabi Seng. Dabi Seng has this beautiful house in a place called Protea in Soweto. Protea is a fairly high-income part of Soweto. It's probably closer to Sandton than the rest of Soweto in terms of the type of houses there. And she built 11 rooms, flats, what she calls amarum, but they're actually little flats behind her house. She rents them for 2,500 to 3,000 rand a month. She bought another house over COVID and demolished it and built 14 units that she rents out for 100,000 rand for the 14 units. She earns about 148,000 rand a month from renting out these units. And she told us about how she went to her bank. All this money goes into a bank account. She went to a bank and she asked for a loan so that she bought a third house that she wants to demolish and build 30 units. And she wanted to borrow 1.5 million rand just from a cash flow constraint perspective. And she went to her bank. She said, look how much money and my salary goes into my bank account. Can I borrow 1.5 million rand? And took them 2 weeks to get back to her. At the end of 2 weeks, I turned her down and said, you know, we can't finance you. So she put in just to test them, she asked them to finance a 1.35 million rand Mercedes. And in 20 minutes, they approved her finance for the vehicle. Which tells you how we think about that sector, because we're trapped in this concept of everyone's poor and everyone's, and there's massive unemployment, there's massive inequality, everyone lives in a shack. Most of those figures are absolute rubbish. And what we're seeing is that we're being shown the mirror that's being given to us of that kind of space is the lowest common denominator. And the media kind of tells us we must extrapolate that to believe it's true for the majority, which it's not. So if you imagine, if I say informal business to people and to you guys, I generally get the sense of a rows of hawkers selling little trinkets and cheap stuff and maybe some vegetables, or it's a corrugated iron little shack where they've got little sachets and they're selling them. You've seen them in India and Africa and stuff like that. And we talk about spaza shops in South Africa, which is a little kind of store. But these images and perceptions are, again, completely wrong. When you think about this so-called informal economy, you need to think quite differently about that. For instance, there's a lady also in Baragwanath taxi rank next to the toilet roll seller who sells about 1,200 vetkoek. Vetkoek are the croissants of the township. It's what you have for breakfast with a slice of cheese or polony or whatever it might be. She sells 1,200 vetkoek for 1.50 rand each, and she makes about 1,000 rand profit every single day on that. And then in the afternoon from about 11, 12 o'clock, she starts selling fish. Very much I had some fish and chips at on the Thames yesterday, and I thought this is just like the karapao that Miriam sells. So Miriam sells about 200 deep-fried fish every single day. She makes another almost 1,000 rand profit on that. So she makes 2,000 rand profit on her sales every single day. And so she makes about 50,000 rand a month, which is that's tax-free in her pocket every single month. She pays 300 rand for a little space that she works in, about the size of the stage. And I said to her, how did you start this? She says, well, I was a geography and a maths teacher. And in 1990, I decided I wanted to become a business person. So I went on a course run by Raymond Ackerman. She said, do you know who he is? I said, yes, I think I know who he is. She says, I did this course for 2 weeks. At the end of 2 weeks, he gave me 290 rand and said, go and start your business. And she says, look at this business I have now. And she pointed outside to this little LDV that she purchased cash, which is brand new and very proud of it. And she's building a two-story house in Soweto that she's building cash. And it kind of shows what little difference we can make, that 290 Rand has completely transformed her. But there's many, many people like Miriam out there. In fact, the out-of-home fast food sector in South Africa is worth about 90 billion Rand a year across about 50,000 outlets. And in fact, it's one of the fastest growing, most successful sectors. You guys have Nando's over here. The average fast food outlet probably does better than Nando's. And in terms of profit, so we've got 90 billion rand a year from 50,000 outlets. This food is not purchased because it's cheaper than formal takeaways like KFC or Nando's. It's generally more expensive. People prefer that kind of food. And then we have another 110 billion rand a year in the alcohol taverns, sit-down restaurant type of environment. Again, the informal taverns in the townships, what some people call shebeens, although they're generally fairly sophisticated outlets. So there's 200 billion rand a year being turned over by this fast food sector and this alcohol sector. And where are they buying their chicken, their cheese slices, their flour for these kind of things? I work with, for instance, RCL, who have a brand called Supreme Flour, and we find there's about 10,000 bakeries in these township spaces baking rolls and bread and these kind of things, doing incredibly well and generating massive turnover from Supreme and other businesses like this. In fact, I built a 3 billion rand a year business for Parmalat and cheese slices. Cheese slices going into these vetkoek and into what's called a gorta, which is the hamburger of the townships, which is in essence a quarter loaf of bread where you take the inside out of the bread and you put in fried chips, a Russian sausage, a burger patty, all sorts of things. Absolutely delicious, but not encouraged if you have a heart problem. But this food, just this food economy, you can imagine the impact of that on the demand that it's creating from people like Astral, who are doing chicken, Rainbow, Parmalat, and other people. In fact, just on the Parmalat cheese slices, I launched this in 2005. There was no cheese of any format in the townships when I launched it, or cheese slices for Parmalat. These are individually wrapped single cheese slices. And when we launched them, in fact, rich black people were called cheese boys or cheese girls because only rich black people got cheese slices. And in fact, the statistics are quite mind-boggling. If you take every Parmalat cheese slice sold in a year, that's primarily going into the informal sector, and you pack every cheese slice one on top of the other, they'd reach the moon and halfway back. So... And then what about retail? You know, we have what we call spazas, and the spaza term spaza comes from the word hidden, because in the apartheid days, black people were not allowed to own and run a business. So these little spaza shops became the grocers and retailers, little hidden behind people's houses and so on. This sector has really boomed. And You know, over the years, I've said to people like ShopRite, Pick and Pay, Masscash, and so on, that the next big sector is what I call the spazarets, a supermarket type. Spas are still fairly informal. And this sector has completely boomed. In fact, Nielsen recently said the spazaret sector achieved 187 billion rands worth of annual spend across about 100,000 outlets. And the growth in the informal spaza sector was 24% versus about 15% in the formal sector. So where is the growth happening? The growth is happening in this formal sector. And many of these are run by Ethiopian and Somali business people, often illegal, but highly efficient businesses. They pay 25 billion rand a year for rental to the South African households who own those businesses. So about 45 billion rand a year is earned, both in backroom rental, 20 billion rand a year, and about 25 billion in spaza rental. And again, if we consider the unemployment figures, no one is measuring this rental, which is in essence a passive income, 50 billion rand a year odd in that kind of space. Alec and I also interviewed a young lady called Balisa, who has a hair salon. In the townships, they call them saloons, not salons. I just thought saloons was where you had your guns and you went to drink. Anyway, she rents out, she has a saloon, a little beauty shop where she does hair and nails and lashes. And despite my hairstyle, I've done a huge amount of work in the black hair care sector. In fact, if I knew then what I know now, I'd have a very different kind of set of braids and so on. But in the townships, in fact, kind of just as an aside, in the townships, a really popular thing is what's called a Brazilian. And a Brazilian is Brazilian hair extensions woven onto your hair or used as a wig. I was telling my wife a while ago, happens to be white, I said, you won't believe how many women in the townships have Brazilians. And my wife was, and I said, you know, I felt them, they felt real. And my wife had a different idea what a Brazilian was, which I clearly don't need to explain here to but it wasn't a hair extension. Contrary, I think. The most stolen product in South African ports, according to Hollard Marine, is hair extensions. In fact, it used to be coal, and according to Hollard Marine, there's now hair extensions. And hair imports into South Africa have grown 64% year on year, again, according to Hollard Marine's insurance business. And annual imports are now reaching around 1.1 billion rand a year. That's just on hair extensions. And this whole salon sector across about 60,000 outlets, people like Balisa. Balisa is 20. She employs 10 staff. She runs this little hair salon, looks like a little gazebo, yet very successful business. The salon sector generates 10 billion rand a year across about 60,000 outlets. And the beauty sector is one of the fastest growing sectors of anything. So why that? Again, let's rewind to the smaller households. Smaller households spend more money on themselves, on personal care items, hair extensions, Brazilians, and so on. So it's not doom and gloom. And in fact, if we look at this, just even the impact on the formal sector, South African smartphone market grew 73% year on year in November 2023, or last quarter of 2023, the highest growth since 2021. We sell in South Africa, people like Pepkor, Pep, Ackerman, other people, sell 20 million smartphones a year. In South Africa, we've got an adult population of about 40-45 million people. We sell 20 million smartphones a year and one of the fastest growing sector. The Vugile Property Fund, Moseneke family, it's a listed business. This was their recent financials. They said South African consumers are holding up better than expected in a struggling economy. The retail-focused Vugile Property Fund experienced a significant uptick in trading densities. Trading densities are, in essence, turnover per square meter. Township shopping centers led the way with a 13% increase in trading densities, rural portfolio with 7.2%, and the urban shopping centers, the urban centers, only about 4%. So again, how is that possible if we have this massive unemployment and all of this misery and everything that we talk about? Three times the turnover in township shopping centers for the Vugile Property Fund. In fact, yesterday I was just reading the news and there's a, I don't know them, there was a headline, Township Mall Owner Dipula sees buoyant occupancies as informal economy holds its own. And the headline was yesterday, Dipula Property Fund reports that lower income shoppers seem better able to deal with interest rate shocks. And at the same time, the informal economy may also be larger than previously thought. Wonder that. And actually, the CEO said there's more going on in the informal economy that's not being picked up by the Reserve Bank numbers. Again, surprise, surprise. Guys, these are not just things I'm saying. These are listed businesses talking about what's happening there. So we have an incredibly powerful economy that's not measured. And just because it's not measured doesn't mean that it's not there. In fact, Gerry Fourie spoke at the last BizNews conference in Hermanus. And I just want to read what he said because I thought it was great. Gerry Fourie said, we have worked quite a lot with Gigi. While we are what we are focusing on is what we call the emerging market or the township market. That opportunity is the same as the opportunity there is when we started the retail bank 22 years ago, where 60% of people were not banked. Capitec, for those who don't know, is the largest bank by numbers in Africa. I think 22 million account holders, came out of nowhere, doing incredibly well. And so to continue, Gerry Fourie said, it's incredible the businesses that are taking place in that informal economy. There's massive potential in the emerging market and the township markets and the informal markets to unlock the potential in South Africa because government is struggling doing it and we really want to be successful. He said, and the opportunity in the informal economy keeps me awake at night to look at these opportunities. The future of economic potential lies in our informal economy. And I'm not the only one who's seeing it. So there's these massive informal businesses creating demand from brand manufacturers like Unilever, Tiger Brands. They're the fuel behind ShopRite and people like Pepco that deposit their money at Capitec and so on and so on. They sustain our economy. And these are the businesses that aren't part of the massive unemployment figures that you hear about. Now, there's another gogo in downtown Johannesburg who sells 3,000 Vetkoek every single day for 1 rand each, and she makes about 1,500 rand a day. Her and her husband have been doing it for 10 years and does incredibly well. And I said to her a while ago, I said, do you have a job? And she said in Zulu, she said, "Ngiyasebenza anginamsebenzi," which is a play on words. I work, but I do not have work. Because what we've created in South Africa is an environment where if you do not have a payslip, you are unemployed. We've created the sense, and financial institutions are particularly complicit in that, that if you do not have a payslip, we cannot extend you any form of credit or finance or anything. In fact, if you go to some of these downtown areas, you have these fantastic posters on the wall. The one poster says, help you find lost lover. You can get traditional medicine to help you find your lover who's left you. The other one says penis extension. I've been reading these, you see. The third one will say credit. Blacklist not important. Bring 3 months payslips and 3 months bank 3 months payslips and 3 months bank statements. Because we've created this environment where financially you don't exist, even if you are making these large amounts of money. And this is the thing that we have to recognize. How do we recognize the sector? And Warren will talk later about these are the kind of sectors which we need to be able to finance and stimulate and grow. But by my calculation, the informal gastronomic economy, the so-called informal economy, is worth 750 billion rand a year. That's 3/4 of a trillion rand, and one of the fastest growing sectors, as I've illustrated to you. So the reality is also in South Africa, we don't need to start new businesses. The businesses are there. What you're reading about in the media is, in, as I said earlier, is in most cases speaking to the minority or speaking to the payslip part of our economy. And in fact, the Minister of Small Business Development in South Africa recently said, we need to create more entrepreneurs in South African townships. And I was like, this is insane. It's like we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them, but we don't recognize them. And there's a lady who's a baker in the townships who works in this little back room in a little shack. Her name's Nomqobelo. Nomqobelo means on Saturday. But 7 days a week, she bakes a range of different cookies and biscuits and stuff like that. She puts them in 20-liter buckets, and they are sold by her husband to street hawkers. And in fact, often the street hawkers send him a live location. So when he gets the recently baked 20-liter bucket of biscuits, he has to run down the road to following the live location until he finds the hawker who's just run out, hand over, get some money, and go back. You know, the use of technology is also kind of very innovative. But we do not recognize Nomqobelo as an entrepreneur, despite the fact that, as we know, Steve Jobs started in a garage no different to Nomqobelo's. And this is the mindset that we have to change, not only in terms of opportunity, but recognition of economic activity out there. And I believe we do not need to start new businesses. We have thousands, hundreds of thousands of new businesses. We need to help them scale up. We need to give them the resources, the support. This will create new jobs in South Africa. The politicians won't. No matter what they tell us, they're telling us they're going to create jobs out there. Nowhere in the world are jobs being created at scale. Jobs are being created, or incomes are being created, through small businesses, entrepreneurs, and so on. And it's no difference in South Africa. So we need to look at how formal businesses can partner with this kind of sector. And in the rural space, no different. In fact, there's an NGO called Mdugajani, run by my brother, in rural Msinga. Now, I just want to stop there. Where is Msinga? People say to me all the time, where is Msinga? And I struggle to explain geographically where it is. And now I just tell people it's right next to Nkandla. You'll have all heard of Nkandla, where that fire pool was. So Jacob's our neighbor. So my brother runs this in rural KZN. In rural KZN, the biggest small livestock animals are goats. And in fact, most of the goat owners are rural women, because men, it's below them to own a goat. So you'd rather have some cattle, even though they can't survive in arid Msinga. And they work with 56,000 rural farmers, mainly women, and they teach them breeding and farming techniques. And most importantly, they create these markets in rural KZN, where speculators come from the city to purchase these livestock at these markets. Often the market's just a little fence put under a big marula tree. And they facilitate the payment between the person from the city to a rural granny or whatever it might be. And they managed to generate 250 million rand in sales last year for these 56,000 rural women farmers. And you think they get any help and support in terms of doing that kind of thing? And this is the tragedy. Even our rural economy, we have this inability to support these farmers from government or even from corporates and so on. And the opportunities are sitting there. It's how do we support those people? So I'm going to kind of end there. From the urban perspective, I think there's opportunities Warren's going to talk about. But just in ending, I'd like to read from one of my books. The informal world is inhabited by tribes of survivors, of gassipreneurs, tabletop traders, hawkers and hustlers, gassikos restaurateurs, spazeret superstores and backroom rental barons. A world of small people doing big things, transforming South Africa a little bit at a time. This is the next great frontier of Africa, and it's unknown and unexplored by the formal world as a deep outer space. We know more about the wildlife of Africa than we know about the informal market and the people who live in it. But go among it, respect them, they are the future. Thank you.